Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Puranjana, Text 13. Sa ekada himavato dakshinesh vata sanushu tadarsha navabir dvarbi puram lakshita lakshana. Sa ekada himavato dakshineshata sanushu tadarsha navabir dvarbi puram lakshita lakshana. Sa ekada himavata dakshineshata sanushu tadarsha navabir dvarbi puram lakshita lakshana. Sa ekavato dakshineshata sanushu tadarsha navabir dvarbi puram lakshita lakshana. Dakshine satasanushu Vaishnavis.
Ekada himavato dakshine satasanushu ashanavari varmi ashita lakshana. Ekada himavato dakshine satasanushu ashanavari.
Sa, that King Puranjana, ekada, once upon a time, himavataha, the Himalaya Mountains, dakshineshu, southern, Ata, after this. Sanushu, on the ridges. Dadarsha, found. Navabihi, with nine. Dvarabihi, gates. Puram, a city. Lakshita, visible. Lakshanam, having all auspicious facilities. Translation by Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Once, while wandering in this way, he saw on the southern side of the Himalayas, at a place called Bharatavarsha, India, a city that had nine gates all about and was characterized by all auspicious facilities. Please repeat. Once, while wandering in this way, he saw on the southern side of the Himalayas, in a place called Bharatavarsha, India, a city that had nine gates all about and was characterized by all auspicious facilities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's a couple of pages long. The tract of land south of the Himalaya Mountains is the land of India, which was known as Bharatavarsha. When a living entity takes birth in Bharatavarsha, he is considered to be most fortunate. Indeed, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has stated, Bharata Bhumilihaila Manushayan Mayara Janma Sartaka Kari Karakara Upapakara. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 9, Text 41. Thus, whoever takes birth in the land of Bharatavarsha attains all the facilities of life. He may take advantage of all these facilities for both material and spiritual advancement, and thus make his life successful. After attaining the goal of life, one may distribute his knowledge and experience all over the world for humanitarian purposes. In other words, one who takes birth in the land of Bharatavarsha by virtue of activities gets full facility. In India, the climatic condition is such that one can live very peacefully without being disturbed by material conditions. Indeed, during the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira or Lord Ramachandra, people were free from all anxieties. There was not even extreme cold or extreme heat. The three kinds of miserable conditions, adiyatmika, adibhautika, and adidaivika, miseries inflicted by the body and mind itself, those inflicted by other living entities, and natural disturbances, were all absent during the reign of Lord Ramachandra or Maharaj Yudhisthira. But at present, compared to other countries on earth, India is artificially disturbed. Despite these material disturbances, however, the country's culture is settled of life, namely salvation or liberation from material bondage. Thus, in order to take birth in India, one must have performed many pious activities in a past life. In this verse, the word Lakshita Lakshinam indicates that the human body attained in Bharatavarsha is very auspicious. Vedic culture is full of knowledge, and a person born in India can take advantage of Vedic cultural knowledge and the cultural system known as Varnashram Dharma. Even at the present time, as we travel all over the world, we see that in some countries, human beings have many material facilities, but no facilities for spiritual advancement. We find everywhere the defects of one-sided facilities and a lack of full facilities. A blind man can walk, and a lame man cannot walk, but can see. Anda panga nyaya. The blind man may take the lame man over his shoulder. He walks, the lame man may give directions. Thus, combined, they may work, but individually, neither the blind man nor the lame man can walk successfully. Similarly, this human form of life is meant for the advancement of spiritual life and for keeping the material necessities in order. Especially in the Western countries, there are ample facilities for material comforts, but no one has any idea of spiritual advancement. Many are hankering after spiritual advancement, but many cheaters come, take advantage of their money, bluff them, and go away. For there to give all facilities for both material and spiritual advancement. In this way, people in the Western countries may take advantage of this movement. In India, any man in the villages, unaffected by the industrial cities of India, can still live in any condition and make spiritual advancement. The body has been called the city of nine gates, and these nine gates include two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, one mouth, a genital, and a rectum. When the nine gates are clean and working properly, it is to be understood that the body is healthy. In India, these nine gates are kept clean by the villagers who rise early in the morning, bathe in the well or rivers, go to the temples to attend Mangal Arati, chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and take prasad. In this way, one can take advantage of all facilities of human life. We are gradually introducing this system in different countries in our society in the Western. One who takes advantage of it becomes more and more enlightened in spiritual life. At the present moment, India may be compared to the lame man and the Western countries to the blind glitter of material opulence. The blind man of the Western countries and the lame man of India should combine together in this Krishna consciousness movement. Then the lame man of India can walk with the help of the Westerners, and the blind Westerner can see with the help of the lame man. In short, the material advancement of the Western countries and the spiritual assets of India should combine for the service of all human society. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasavi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining Krishna consciousness on many different levels in this purport and in the Srimad Bhagavatam generally. But here we can see he's explaining the condition of the soul in the material world. And he's also speaking not just on the individual level, but also in terms of, you know, the whole world, you know, geopolitical situation. On the level of the individual, and he's explaining how each of us is a conscious self, a spirit soul, that has come into the city of nine gates, a material body, with its different openings for the senses. There are the two eyes, the two ears, the two nostrils, the mouth, and then the organs of the openings for the genitals and the organs of evacuation. And the conditioned soul lives, you know, within this city of nine gates, but it's not the real home of the conditioned soul. King Paranjana represents the conditioned soul, and he's left his real home and he's looking for satisfaction somewhere else. So he finds now this city, the city of nine gates on the southern side of the Himalayan mountains. And this means he's found, you know, he's entering the human form of life. But he's entering a human body that is especially adapted for making spiritual progress. But as we'll see, as this whole story of King Puranjana goes on, it's possible to use, you know, the body and either for sense gratification or for advancing in Krishna consciousness. And, you know, depending upon how one uses the body, goes towards going back home, back to Godhead, or remains entangled in this cycle of birth and death in the material world. So Srila Prabhupada's mentioning here that particularly if one takes, you know, birth in India, one is, you know, very fortunate because still there's some remnants of Krishna conscious culture there. Although because of, you know, the influence of the age of Kali, and Srila Prabhupada mentions centuries of foreign subjugation, you know, the culture's been broken a little bit. But still, some of that original Krishna conscious culture is there. It's still present in the country. So those who take birth there have a special advantage. Of course, Lord Chaitanya said, you know, that he wanted his movement spread all over the world. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada took that very seriously. You know, he took the order of his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, very seriously. And he did spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. It's on every continent now. If you open Back to Godhead magazine, look at the list of temples, you'll see there's over 400 temples in all parts of the world. And there are many of them that aren't even listed. There's even more temples, or even more ISKCON temples that are listed in Back to Godhead magazine. You know, on my recent trip to Europe, I've, you know, seen some of them. So this Krishna consciousness movement has spread to a good many towns and villages all over the world. And this is giving people, you know, the opportunity to create a situation where there's some interaction, you know, between India and the Western countries in the way that, you know, Srila Prabhupada describes here in this analogy of the lame man and the blind man cooperating together. So Srila Prabhupada's giving a model for how the world can make progress on a broader scale. You know, if people were to take, you know, Srila Prabhupada's advice seriously, if the leaders of these countries were to take Srila Prabhupada's advice seriously. And to some extent, you know, this is happening. India is making more material progress, and India's spiritual knowledge has been, you know, communicated to the Western world. But not everyone is taking it entirely seriously. The leaders of the Western countries, you know, haven't yet come to, you know, understand what value there is in that Srila Prabhupada has given, you know, in these books. And so we have a long way to go to realize the bigger vision, you know, that Srila Prabhupada outlines in this, you know, purport of having India consciously, having its government, you know, consciously understanding its duty to spread, you know, spiritual knowledge throughout the world, and having the, you know, the Western countries understand their duty to accept this knowledge and improve their lives, and also to help, you know, raise, you know, the material standard of living in India. Of course, that's happening to some extent. But if it were done consciously according to the the vision that Srila Prabhupada is given in this purport, you know, the whole world would actually be a much better place, both spiritually and materially. So, you know, our duty as followers of Srila Prabhupada is to help do whatever we can to fulfill, you know, the vision, you know, that he's, you know, given in this purport and in the whole, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. We have a duty to individually, you know, perfect our lives in Krishna consciousness according to the, you know, vision given here. We have to learn how to properly live within the city of nine gates, you know, within the material body. We have to learn how to keep the different gates clean, you know, by hearing properly, seeing properly, tasting properly, smelling properly, using the working senses properly. And Srimad Bhagavatam is full of so many directions how to do that. So we have a duty to individually, you know, perfect our lives on the basis of this perfect knowledge. And we also have a duty to help society perfect itself, you know, on, you know, the basis of this perfect knowledge. Some devotees asked me to speak a little bit about my recent travel, so I'll take a few minutes to do that. So I left New Dwarka in around September 10th. Now it's December 10th. It seems like, I mean, to me it just seems like a dream, you know, like. But, you know, the first place I went to was the city of Zadar in Croatia, where I attended a meeting of the European Association of Archaeologists, which is one of the main professional organizations of archaeologists. I presented two papers there, you know, about my work in bringing Vedic concepts into the field of archaeology. So that's sort of like the Riviera of Croatia. You know, a lot of people come to the Adriatic coast of Croatia because it's a very beautiful place, many old cities, Roman cities, medieval cities. So it's a very attractive place, and the weather was very nice. So I, you know, was staying in a, you know, hotel there and during the conference. And once I turned on the television in the room and I saw myself, because I'd gone to Croatia previously and they taped two programs on a science show, you know, national television. And so this, one of the shows about my book, Forbidden Archaeology, was being shown at the time I went to this archaeology conference. So, you know, the next day I went to the university where the conference was being held, and a lot of the students are pointing, you know, they'd seen me on television, you know, the night before. But anyways, that was, you know, a good event. Then after that, you know, I went, after the conference, the devotees organized about a three-week lecture and media tour for me in Croatia. So both of my books have been, both the books Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution have been published by a publisher in Croatia. So they kind of took advantage of that opportunity to organize, you know, lectures at universities, interviews with radio, television, newspapers. So I went to, I think, about six cities in all over the country, and that worked out very well. And then I went to Bulgaria, where, you know, the books have also been published by a Bulgarian publisher. And the devotees did the same thing there. They organized a tour all over the country, you know, where I was able to speak at universities and other kinds of educational institutions, and also speak to the general public through through, you know, television programs. You know, I was on one of the most popular television programs in the country. It's like a late night talk show. It's on for an hour. And I came there, and the host of the show is like a famous actress there. And before the show, she told me, "I've read, both of your books." I said, "Oh, really? How did you hear about them?" He said, "Well, you're famous in this country. You're like a star here or something." So, and it was a very interesting show, because they brought on, to surprise me, they brought on the lady who's the owner of the publishing company that, has published, my books in Bulgaria. So that was kind of like a surprise. And the weather was also getting colder. I saw my first snow, during the latter part of that tour. And then I saw a lot more when I went to Russia. I went to Russia in around November 10th. I stayed there a month. And, the devotees there had organized a lecture and publicity tour for me based on the book Human Devolution, which was published last year by a publisher in Russia. And we started out in Moscow, and I was on two national television programs in Moscow, and I was also on the most popular radio talk show, which is called Talk Moscow. And the publisher later told us that after I was on those television shows and that radio show, representatives from Vladimir Putin's office, he's the president of Russia, came to a Moscow bookstore and bought 8 copies of Human Devolution. Because I'd been taught, when I go on these shows, I always say that alternatives to evolution should be allowed in the education system. So maybe they were interested in that aspect of it. And I also heard that the mayor of Moscow bought a copy of the book, too. So that was pretty interesting. And then I spoke at universities in Moscow, including the Russian International Friendship University, which is the third biggest university in the country, and they have a lot of... So I was invited by a professor there who was head of the World History Department. In all my talks, of course, I say I'm a member of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'm a student of the Vedic literature, like the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm presenting a Vedic alternative to the Darwinian theory of evolution. And after the talk, this professor told his students, he said, "This is an example of a real scientist, a real scholar, who has, the courage to question accepted ideas." And it was a really good lecture. And then from Moscow, then went to other cities. It went to 6 or 7 other cities throughout Russia, including Siberia. And the Krishna consciousness movement in Russia is in a period of expansion now. A lot of people are joining. It went through some, phase where things were going up and then down a little bit, and now it appears to be going up again. When they have festivals in Russia, maybe like 3,000, 5,000, devotees come. It's pretty amazing. I didn't go to any of the festivals. Those are usually held in the fall or the summer, the warmer times of the year. But you could see, a lot of activity. The country itself is kind of expanding. Its economy is growing, and the Krishna consciousness movement there appears to be expanding too. And they have members from all levels of society. People, devotees are professors at universities there, scientists, engineers, and then also ordinary people, business people. So that was good to see, how the Krishna consciousness movement is spreading there. But they face obstacles there. I think we've all heard about, the obstacles that they had in trying to make a new temple in Moscow, where the government was giving them some problem, and the the Orthodox Church and anti-cult groups giving them problems. So I also had, you know, some experience of those things. Like, I spoke at many universities. At two universities, there were some problems like that. Like in a city called Yaroslavl, professors at one of the universities there had invited me to speak. And this had been arranged weeks in advance. But then at the last moment, a couple of days, you know, before I got there, the president of the university, under pressure from some, you know, religious organizations and anti-cult groups, so-called anti-cult groups, canceled the lecture. So then the professors went to him and tried to get him to change his mind, but he wouldn't. So then the professors arranged for the lecture to be given at an auditorium right next to the university. And the place was just packed, you know, with students and professors. Because, you know, it seems that, you know, when all the students heard, oh, this lecture's been canceled, you know, like, you know, they became even more interested. You know, like, wow, what's this guy got to say? And that happened at one other university, too, in a city called Tumen. And there what happened, it was, you know, pretty interesting. There again, you know, professors, scientists had invited me to come and speak, and the lecture had been publicized for a couple weeks beforehand. And then at the last minute, you know, a couple days before I arrived, you know, pressure was put on, you know, like the president of the university, and he canceled the lecture. So then again, you know, the professors who would invite me, they went to the president of the university. They said, you know, don't do this. And he stuck to his guns. He said, no, I'm canceling the lecture. And then what happened is the professors arranged for me to get invited by another scientific institution in the same city that was actually higher, you know, at a higher level than this particular university. It was actually a branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences. So the head of this institution said, yeah, we want him to speak here. If anybody tries to pressure us, no way. You know, he's going to speak here no matter who tries to pressure us. And so then they organized a system of shuttle buses, you know, from the university that canceled the lecture. And they just had a huge number of students and professors from the university come to this other lecture so that there was just standing room, you know, like standing room only, you know, like all the seats were filled, the whole place was packed. You know, like the bus was like, you know, it arrived, you know, about 5 minutes after I started giving the talk. And, you know, there's just this huge number of students and professors kind of entered the hall, and everybody kind of clapped when they came in. And again, it was the case, you know, the professors from the university said that when the lecture was canceled, everybody in the university just started talking about it. So I think in both cases, more people wound up coming to the lecture than probably would have come if they'd been held as scheduled. So that was very interesting. And then, of course, when I was sitting in Los Angeles, you know, like in August, you know, thinking, okay, I'm going to Siberia in December. What's that going to be like? And actually, it wasn't as cold as I thought it would be. There was snow, you know, but the temperatures were around, you know, 10 or 20 degrees. But, you know, the devotees there, they explained, like, in January or February, the temperatures go down to 40 degrees below zero. So, so I didn't get the full taste, you know, the Siberian winter, but it was enough for me. So, So it was a very nice, you know, experience getting to, you know, see all these devotees in all these different countries, you know, performing their duties in Krishna consciousness there. But as always, it's always good to be back in New Dwarka. Hari Bol. So does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes.
Consciousness at the same time. Is there any relationship